I went to an Ivy League school. I'm very highly educated. I know words. I have the best words. I have the but there's no better word than stupid. Right? There is none. There is none.
So Jazza, when we started this podcast, so like 2.5 years ago, did you expect that we'd ever be talking about a President Trump after Britain voted to leave the European Union?
So after the Britain left the European Union, well, we haven't actually left yet. I just want to make that really clear.
Yeah, sorry, voted to leave the European Union.
I've always been saying since then that sensible people and liberals should proceed with caution when it comes to this kind of populism. People have been left behind. The world that you and I know, Jimmy, has not served a large number of people, in their opinion, particularly well. We've seen the collapse of like traditional manufacturing jobs in working class, generally white communities across Europe and America. Communities that used to be defined by the union, defined by what was seen as honest work, and their communities have just been collapsed. It's a lot more difficult to be proud of your kind of identity as a working class person when you don't have the solidarity of a community like a union behind you, and when that job gets taken from underneath your feet and then you're doing a couple of shifts at the co-op a week instead. You might technically be doing better off, but it doesn't feel like hard, honest work, and those people are pissed off.
That's quite an interesting distinction you've made, because a lot of people, well, there's been a lot of different interpretations about this election result, but it does seem that a theme that ties across a lot of them is status rather than strict economic well-being, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Some people have talked about inequality, some people have talked about, some people have described the Trump victory as a victory for white supremacism, which I think is somewhat extreme, but there's a grain of truth in that, I think.
I don't think that nearly 50% of the American electorate are white supremacists.
I don't think that's quite what people have said. We probably should vaguely summarise the story. I mean, obviously everyone will have
heard. Come on, for goodness sake, everybody knows. All right, there was an election with Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. Trump won,
but also the Republicans won in Congress. So
yeah,
they now have control of both chambers, and that wasn't expected to happen.
I do remember at the end of the night when it was very clear that Trump won, just kind of checking how the Senate was getting on to see if there was any hope. There wasn't.
Can you please talk me through your emotional journey, as I assume you stayed up to watch the whole thing?
I didn't stay up for the whole thing, actually. So I was awake until about 1 o'clock in the morning UK time. I was trying to stay up for as long as possible to see where Florida went, because essentially, in an awful lot of the predictions, Florida was a key state for Trump.
Mm.
If Trump didn't win Florida, then he was not going to win the presidency. And I was up until like midnight and 1 o'clock, just gone 1 o'clock UK time, when all of the counties were coming in from Florida. And it looked like, when my head actually hit the pillow, because I was passing out in front of the TV, it looks like Hillary was going to get it. She was generally doing better. She was winning the same counties that Obama won in 2012 by a larger margin. And Obama won Florida. He carried Florida in 2012. And so I was assuming that she was going to carry Florida and that we were going to be fine.
I had a similar experience to what I had with Brexit, where I actually went to bed at a similar sort of time to you, but on the basis that I thought Clinton he's probably going to win this, so, you know, I'll just go to bed and wake up and see what the result is.
Yeah, so I'm a sceptical bastard ever since Brexit. That's shaken me to my core. and so I set an alarm, a radio alarm. So Radio 4 was going to wake me up at about 3:30 in the morning. And I was 3:30, it was 4 o'clock in the morning, actually, that it was going to wake me up, because that was when we were going to basically know who was going to win the presidency. That would have been about, like, an hour or two before midnight Eastern time in the US. And I was expecting to just hear Hillary Clinton is on the path to win the presidency of the United States. And then I was going to be able to roll over and have a proper night's sleep, and it was going to be lovely. Obviously, what ended up happening was I was woken up by the words, Donald Trump is on track to win the presidency, and I was... like shaken to my core. It was a very similar emotional journey to that which I had during Brexit night. It all felt very, very familiar. It was lovely.
See,
how about
I obviously, like, I voted for Brexit, but I wouldn't have voted for.
Did you vote for Trump as well? Is this where I'm going to three?
I wouldn't have voted for Donald Trump. I think. If I'd actually had the chance to vote, I would have done more research into it, but I think I probably would have gone for someone like Gary Johnson in the end, because I find Clinton quite unpalatable.
Oh no, fuck off. you're such a bloody idiot. How are we friends?
Well, so yeah, that kind of, aside from the abuse, puts my emotional journey slightly differently to yours, because I actually found out through a Facebook message that you sent me, which was basically just said, when are we going to talk about this shit show? And I thought, oh, has Trump won it? And obviously then just scrambled to find out what exactly was going on, and then it became evident that Trump, he hadn't quite won it by the time that I woke up, but it was pretty much a done deal by that point. So... yeah, I reading the news the past couple of days, I genuinely can't really believe it. I've never actually had that experience before where, like, I'm following a political story and I can't...
Yeah, you keep kind of forgetting that it's real.
Yeah, when you read, like, a news story, it just seems absurd. You're like, it's like President-elect Donald Trump, and you're like, what?
Yeah, my boyfriend's a civil servant, and so has to write, like, memos and stuff. And he messaged me a couple of days ago, yesterday, saying, I just had to write the words President-elect Donald Trump for the first time. Lol.
Well, I've already written my first news story using the phrase President-elect Donald Trump.
Feel filthy.
I don't think, from my point of view, it's even a sense of filth. It's just a sense of incomprehension, really. I know people that predicted that Donald Trump would win. You know, you being one of them, and I just
got it right.
Yeah, but I think you got it right. I'm not really sure what your reasoning was. I know when you made that video that people should go back and check, like, five reasons why Donald Trump will win. And one of them was quite good, because you said, historically, after 8 years in the White House, the presidency usually goes to the other party. That was probably the strongest signal, I thought. But everything else seemed to point in the opposite direction.
I would argue, so I think, the main argument that I had in that video, and dear listener, I do encourage you to go back and watch it, because it's horrific, horrific foreshadowing. I think my final point was, people at the moment just want to fuck shit up. They just want to tip over the apple cart, and they don't care who has to pick up the pieces. There's also, I feel like there were overtones in a lot of the problems that we saw in the Clinton campaign. I kind of described it as the way that Tim Kaine was just a lackluster vice presidential candidate. And I think that her campaign in general just defined itself as just vote against Trump too much. So I was listening in, I think it was the Times podcast today, And there was a horrible bit of foreshadowing with the fact that Hillary Clinton decided to define herself as Stronger Together, which was the slogan for the Remain campaign in the EU referendum vote in the UK. Mm. And the idea that that signifies like remaining the same. It has no motion in it. It has no excitement or push or purpose. Whereas Make America Great Again, I mean, you can argue about, oh, but when was America actually great? But Make America Great Again implies like motion and change and excitement and a switching up of the status quo. And that's what has lost tonight. And I think that actually the Trump presidency has the potential to be even bigger internationally than Brexit, even though Brexit may be the catalyst that ends up pulling apart the European Union.
I mean, before we talk about what a Trump presidency actually looks like, the point you said about like Hillary Clinton, there was no sense of momentum. She wasn't a change candidate. She was a status quo candidate. Does that mean the Democratic Party, like bigwigs, to blame for this ultimately? Because there is that story going around that they essentially fixed up the election to ensure that Bernie Sanders didn't get it.
Oh, of course, she was anointed. Bernie Sanders wasn't meant to run. The only reason he ran was because he didn't have the party leaders whispering in his ear, because he was an independent candidate like 18 months ago.
Do you think he would have beaten Trump if he'd got the nomination?
There's been an awful lot of snobbery about this. A lot of people just poo-pooing the idea that he wouldn't have been able to win. And there's a lot of kind of like explanation of it as, he never actually ended up being kind of stripped apart as a socialist, as somebody who in roundabout ways supported the Cuban socialist regime in the past, not to mention the fact that he's a Jewish man, and Jewish people aren't a very popular part of Trump's base. However, I think that Trump won not just because he was a change candidate, but because he wasn't Hillary Clinton. I think that Hillary Clinton lost it. And literally, to be quite honest, I think that anybody could have beaten him. Anyone but Clinton could have beaten him.
I think a more mainstream candidate than Sanders would have been someone like Joe Biden, who, when he decided not to run, there was a great deal of disappointment.
Joe Biden should have run. Elizabeth Warren should have run. There just needed to be more options on the table for the Democrats, and it needed to be less of an anointment than it ended up being for Clinton. It was just like, oh yeah, it's Hillary's turn now, and she needs to be the first woman of the United States. And to be completely honest, and I know an awful lot of people will disagree with me here, especially in my wonderful liberal circles, Hillary Clinton, being a woman is not enough to be elected president. And granted, she was not afforded the opportunity to talk extensively about policy. She basically, policy-wise, had to take on some Bernie Sanders stuff, but basically say she was going to be a third term for Obama. Other than that, she just wasn't able to define herself as anything other than against other people. And I think that was a huge problem. Actually, coming back to my incredibly accurate prediction video about
you're going to be riding on that for a very long time, I can tell.
Yeah, so much. Hillary Clinton, she was suffering from, and she suffered, I think, from the unenthusiastic voter. There weren't enough people. It wasn't like an Obama being the first black president. It was euphoric in 2008. I was there. I remember it felt like a defining moment in US history. Electing a female president is also a defining moment in the nation's history.
See, I actually somewhat disagree with you on that, because I think electing a woman the country having elected a black president is actually not that impressive as it goes. Just because of the scale of the challenges that black people in America have had to overcome compared to the scale of the challenges that women have had to overcome, I think it's more difficult
I disagree with you.
It's been historically more difficult to be a black guy in America, but particularly than a white privileged woman like Hillary Clinton, I would say.
Sure, they are very different experiences, but neither of those groups had the vote 100 years ago. And I think that for both of those groups to end up going from repressed property, essentially, of white men to leading the country or getting incredibly close to leading the country, those are really strong pivotal moments for a nation.
Well, I think electing a female president would have been a big deal had they not already elected a black president. That's basically my point. And I don't think anyone can seriously suggest that they would prefer to be a black person, man or woman, in like pre-Civil War or even actually late 19th century America than a woman in those scenarios. A white woman, anyway.
I'm not sure how. I'll be honest, Jimmy. I'm not sure how relevant this conversation is to the fact that we're going to all die in a nuclear holocaust.
Okay, so how bad is a Trump presidency going to be? Do you reckon?
Okay. So, I think that the world that we have grown up in, which has increasingly been internationalist, where people like us are able to move across borders relatively easily, where the West has been a beacon for stability and been at the head of the top of the status quo. I think that that world, even after 4 years, can quite dramatically change. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to end up seeing a US like Donald Trump has spoken quite openly about. If not pulling out of NATO, reducing the amount of money that the US gives to it, pulling out of free trade agreements like NAFTA, cancelling the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
So just to be clear, NAFTA is the Mexican-Canadian-American agreement, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership includes most of the Pacific Rim but not China.
Correct.
And that hasn't actually been signed yet.
That is still in negotiations, yes. What I think could be quite interesting is the fact that in the past, for example, the US dollar has been the standard
reserve currency, yeah.
And I'm not suggesting that's necessarily going to change, but it's kind of a symbol of how stable American democracy is supposed to be, with all of its checks and balances. It's meant to be like the steady as she goes nation in the world, while everything else is relatively chaotic. The same with Europe. Where do you see stability now? Stability now is places like Russia, is places like China and places like India. And at the end of the day, prosperity and investment like stability, as opposed to great changes such as Brexit and such as the Trump presidency. What I will say about internationally, I think that Trump is actually going to be this makes me quite sick to say this, but I think that he actually is probably going to be quite good for the UK. I think he's exactly the type of president that a Brexit UK needs, one that is going to be very happy about subverting the status quo in Europe, kind of giving two fingers up to Angela Merkel. It was quite famous that Obama said that we were going to be the back of the queue. And then Trump said, oh no, we have a special relationship with the UK. And we've seen more of that simplified top line rhetoric about this special relationship we have with the cables about with Theresa May and Donald Trump talking. I by no means think that Donald Trump and Theresa May are going to be bezzy mates like Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan were. I just think they're from very different worlds.
I'm very different personalities as well. It's hard to think of two politicians who are more contrasted in their approach.
Yeah, man. But Donald Trump likes the idea of a special relationship with the UK. The UK loves the idea of having a special relationship with the US, especially after Brexit. And I think that the UK is going to forego a more moralistic stance in order to get the most out of a USA that is going to be a lot more selective in who it deals with. Embarrassed, actually, by the way that Theresa May responded by saying that, basically saying stuff along the lines of, oh, we're going to prosper through trade and commerce. Trade, commerce, commerce and trade, trade and commerce. And then you heard Angela Merkel's congratulatory statement, which stated that Germany and the USA have a relationship based on the rule of law and of respect for each other and other cultures and all that kind of stuff. And it was a lot more biting than the Theresa May message, which just basically buried her nose up his ass.
To be fair, they're in very different positions in terms of their domestic politics, aren't they? I mean, Theresa May's just starting a new premiership, and Angela Merkel is potentially on her way out, but she's at least established.
Yeah, totally. But I think that in the grand scheme of things, in terms of international relations, Trump's presidency is probably going to be quite good economically for the UK. What kind of scares me a little bit is the fact that we now have a president who's not willing to tackle climate change. We have a president who genuinely does have policies that will restrict movement of people from certain parts of the world. It's going to be very difficult for him to do the whole ban Muslims thing, but he will probably ban a lot of people coming from Muslim countries. When you read his first 100 days policies, that's kind of the way that they put it.
He's going to be able to build that famous wall across the Mexican-US border?
I think he is going to build it. He's going to build something at least.
There's a fence going across it right now, isn't there? Something.
There's a fence and a wall in certain places across the border, but it isn't a continuous wall. I think he's going to fill in the gaps. he genuinely does talk about. So in his like first 100 days policies, this is from NPR, they broke down all of his policies that he was going to enact in his first 100 days. He's going to end illegal immigration with the End Illegal Immigration Act, brilliantly named.
Straight into the point.
Yeah, it's going to fund the construction of a wall on our southern border with full understanding that the country Mexico will be reimbursing the United States for the full cost.
I just don't see how that's going to happen, but maybe he knows something that I don't.
I think that he's probably going to find a way of getting that reimbursement through, like, tariffs or something.
There was some talk about him taking remittances from Mexican migrants sent back to their families in Mexico, sort of interfering with that in some way. But I don't know if there's any substance to that. You know, maybe he will find some sort of way, or maybe they'll come to some sort of agreement, but who knows?
Something that I worry about, and this is something that we experienced here after Brexit as well, is the emboldening of
bigotry.
Yeah. Thank you for putting it blunter than I was looking at, but yes, bigotry. If I were a Muslim American, I'd be bloody terrified now. I'd be more terrified now than after 9/11.
There aren't actually that many Muslim Americans proportionally. They're a much bigger minority in the UK than they are in the US.
Sure. No, I know, but I'd still be bloody terrified if I were a Muslim American.
Do you not think though that they probably? I'm assuming things here, but I assume that Muslim Americans congregate in cities, which actually largely voted for Clinton rather than Trump.
Well, we should say that Clinton got the popular vote.
Yes, she did.
More people voted for Clinton than Trump.
At least at the time of. At the time that we're talking, they haven't actually declared all of the states, according to the thing I'm looking at. I'm not sure if that's out of date.
Yeah, but Trump still won, so...
Yeah.
Jimmy, how do you... I've talked a lot. How do you feel about this?
So initially I was pretty concerned, to put it mildly, because, I think one of the things that I worry about most when looking at politics is actually foreign policy, because, I mean, this is true of the both of us. The economic state that we're in is not something that's endangered so much by domestic policy, but foreign policy has more of an opportunity to damage us. And just the amount of stuff that Trump has said about NATO, about his approach to intervention in the Middle East as well. I'm not necessarily mad on intervention in the Middle East from the Western point of view, but I do think it's dangerous to leave it all to Russia and Saudi Arabia and Iran as well. But the NATO thing I think is particularly concerning. He does have a point when he says that some of the smaller members of NATO have not been paying their way in the terms of military expenditure.
Obama has also been saying this stuff. He's tried to insist NATO members commit to a certain amount of their GDP going towards the military.
It's supposed to be 2%.
The UK is the only member who's actually honoured that.
Apart from the US, that
apart
is.
Apart from the US, obviously.
Yeah.
So, I think it's really concerning, the Trump presidency internationally, and this really has shaken the world. Because at the end of the day, McCain in 2008, the Republican candidate who lost to Obama, it wouldn't really have affected us that much. Mitt Romney as the president may have had implications across the US, but it wouldn't have there wouldn't really have been much difference between an Obama foreign policy and a Romney foreign policy. Trump's foreign policy is almost like most of what he defines himself as. And the way that he looks at the world is just so starkly different. And I think that that's why this is going to be so consequential, because, I mean, Donald Trump has managed to sound vaguely presidential in the past couple of days by not saying that he's going to grab anybody by the genitals.
his victory speech was oddly gracious.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the top line of BBC News at the moment is Trump says talks with Obama is an honour, which is quite odd for somebody who was claiming that he wasn't a legitimate president because he was actually born in Kenya.
It is almost schizophrenic, the way in which Trump has actually turned since winning the election. I mean, we went from a situation where he could have potentially contested a Clinton victory and caused all sorts of rancor, and now he sort of almost sounds like a regular American politician at this point, but I'm sure he'll overturn that in due course.
You know what I see shadows of here? It's almost like the class clown has been given something very serious to do that he thinks is very, very important, and so he's taken it incredibly seriously. But he'll eventually get really bored and just start misbehaving again. And I think I would love it if Trump were able to be vaguely presidential. I think he's going to get bored and probably start a war somewhere.
Well, I think he'll probably end up getting bogged down significantly in the detail of certain policies. Not him personally, but his administration, if you see what I mean. And
he doesn't know how any of this works.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, there's so much gridlock in Washington anyway that it's going to be a lot tamer, I think, than the worst fears that have been expressed by some people. But there is still, obviously, there is still a chance that he might do something quite extreme. Go ahead.
How do you think that he's going to interact with the majorities that the Republicans have in the House and the Senate?
Well, given how many of the Republicans repudiated him, either by withdrawing their support or publicly criticising him, or in the case of George Bush Jr., who actually said that he wasn't voting for Trump or Clinton when he cast his ballot in the presidential election, there are some underlying tensions in the Republican Party, in the sense that the Republican president is not really a Republican in a conventional sense. And I think that's going to tell over time. I can't really see them letting all the differences between them lie for the duration of Trump's presidency.
I don't know. I think that people enjoy power too much, and the amount that you can do with all three bodies of the government on your side is phenomenal. I mean, it's how Obamacare got passed. Can we have a moment for Obama? Because there's literally one of the things that one of the main kind of things that Trump wants to do is to roll back everything that he's done, and he can do that very easily with the House and the Senate with him.
Mm. And also, you mentioned the judiciary. There's obviously the empty seat on the Supreme Court that needs to be filled, and some people have pointed out that two of the other members, whose names I can't remember, two of the other judges are getting very old at this point and could well die within the next 4 years and be replaced themselves.
Ginsburg is one of them, yeah.
So, you know, it could. Some people have said, and I think this is a more legitimate fear, is he won't do something sort of extreme and immediate, but he'll actually do long-term lasting damage to American politics, or he'll at least change the course of American politics in such a way that we'll be dealing with a lot of the repercussions, you know, for 30 years down the line and potentially longer.
You know what, I've been shocked, and I've been not so much angry, because this isn't so much my fight, because it's not my country. But I feel oddly optimistic, because we have something to fight against now. And I think that this is the biggest nail in the coffin of liberal hope of 2016. 2016 has been a fucking shit show, hasn't it, really?
Well, I personally voted for Brexit, so I don't see that as a bad outcome.
Yeah, but one day you'll realise the mistake that you made. And it's okay.
If you say so.
I'll wait until you get there, Jimmy. It's fine.
Is there going to be a point where you admit that Brexit wasn't such a bad idea after all? That's the real question.
Jimmy, I'm basically a European federalist. You I feel like this is our generation's fight. And I think that this is something that's going to fire rockets up of not just Americans, but everybody's asses. And I think that complacency becomes very difficult after this point, because we've hit rock bottom in terms of, like, it's just quite a sad day for decency when an alleged sexual abuser and a man who mocks people with disabilities and will encourage thuggery amongst his supporters, when a man like that can be voted the most powerful person in the world. But I think that that means that we have to get our shit together. And I think that we will. There's going to be so many memes.
I mean, there's two points that I want to respond to there. The first one is, I think you're kind of forgetting how strong institutions are in the US and in the wider Western world. The problem with strongmen is when they manage to emerge in countries that don't have strong institutions. And I'm talking about things like independent judiciaries. Obviously, America is more politicized than most, but it still is fairly respected in the scheme of things. There's also all the different states and all the governors' houses and all the different legislatures. America is still much the same country it was a week ago, and it still has an awful lot going for it that will not only frustrate any really extreme changes that Trump tries to push through, but, you know, it's still a world-leading country in terms of quality of life and the quality of its political institutions. So in that sense, I'm probably a lot less worried than you are. I'm trying to remember what the second point I was trying to make was.
Well, we'll see, won't we? What's actually, like, I think that the checks and balances are meant to be there, and are kind of there in the Founding Fathers' words, and are meant to be the guiding principles of the bodies of government for the United States. And so strong men, if you end up electing a fool, it's meant to have checks and balances for that. And we'll see if they will actually work, or if they've been eroded through the last 50 or 60 years or so of presidents being afforded more and more power.
I mean, the second point I've just remembered that I want to pick up on is, when you say it's our fight, I mean, you and me, politically speaking, are broadly similar, but there's a diversity of political opinion about where the West should go from this point in. It's not entirely obvious what exactly should happen from here. I know you're still, and you and plenty of other people are wedded to the idea that liberal openness as a broad platform is the thing that makes the most sense. But I think particularly with the rise of countries like China, and to a much lesser extent India, there's going to be other models of governance that are actually,
sure, definitely,
you know, counterbalancing what has kind of been taken for granted, certainly since the end of the Cold War.
I totally agree with that. But so the reason that I say that it's our fight, I think that it's more of a cultural thing. And the reason that I kind of, I do agree with you that I think that the internationalist, globalized, liberal values that are frankly the only world I've ever known. And that's one of the reasons that I'm so concerned, because I've done quite well out of this world. I've been incredibly privileged in the places I've been able to go, and the experiences I've been able to have, and the opportunities that I've had, and I worry that that's going to be restricted now. And so that's a very selfish way of putting it, right?
It is, yeah. But who's the R that you're referring to? As in which subgroup? When you say it's our fight, who's in that group?
Have you seen the map of how millennials voted?
I have seen that map, yeah. It's pretty much entirely Democrat, isn't it?
Pretty much so. Like, Hillary Clinton gets 500 electoral college votes, and it's the biggest landslide in American history.
Yeah.
I think it's those people's fight. And I think that the fight actually generally is cultural more than anything. That kind of like is a lot more accepting of people of other backgrounds, of other cultures, of other races, of other creeds, and I feel like there is kind of a deep rooted sense for people who have my kind of background that there is decency in those stances towards people from different parts of the world and from different kinds of backgrounds. That kind of like, it's the idea that love trumps hate, right? And that's what kind of has been sparked in my gut slightly in the last couple of days, and that's what makes me feel optimistic, because I've never felt that needs to be shouted from the rooftops more than now. Vote for Jazza 2020.
See, one thing that immediately strikes me is that people do get more conservative as they get older. So the fact that millennials are voting one way now doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be voting in a similar way in 20 years' time, or even beyond that. But also, I think
we are the first generation to be exposed to such a cacophony of cultures all of our lives, and I think that is something very defining of millennials as a generation. That has never really happened before. It's very easy to other people and to stereotype them and to blame them for all of your ills if you've never met somebody from that background. And that is a lot harder for millennials to do because we are more likely to know somebody who's LGBTQ+, to know somebody who is transgender, or to know somebody who is Muslim, for example.
Yeah, but I do think there's a tendency in history for things to swing backward and forward, and I sort of have a feeling that having gone through several decades, you know, in your lifetimes, where we've become more and more liberalised in terms of trade flows, in terms of people's movement and that sort of thing, we're actually on a swing back. And, you know, how long that swing back lasts, I don't really know, but it could last as long as the process of liberalisation that was arguably kicked off during the Thatcher-Reaganite era.
Ugh.
So, you know, we could be having...
What to say about that? We'll see, I think. I think the next... this has been talked about a lot in quite a lot of media, that the implications for this are that the next domino to fall is France's presidential election next year, where Marine Le Pen, the head of the Front National, is very likely to go through to the second round.
I think she's near certain at this point to go through the second round.
She's like almost 100% going to get into the second round, which then becomes a one-on-one runoff. And I think that the biggest lesson that we've kind of learned from Brexit and from Trump is that there are an awful lot of people who haven't voted in a very long time, and so haven't really been factored into either policy or... like polling got it horribly wrong, didn't they?
Well, I think that something that the Brexit and the presidential election and also the 2015 general election in the UK all had in common is there was an element of shy Tory / shy Trump / shy Brexit voters. You know, people who for whatever reason...
I think it was shyness. I think it was just people who had just kind of checked out of politics and not voted for a long time. When you poll people, one of the ways that you're meant to control for fluctuations in the population is by asking them if they voted in the last election. People who didn't vote in the last election are not as likely to vote in this election, regardless of who they say they like. And I think that has been one of the metrics that has kind of skewed a lot of the polling, because there have been such huge... increases in the amount of the white working class vote in the north of England, in the UK, in the Rust Belt, in the USA, and I think we might see something similar in France.
See, I thought turnout was quite low at the US presidential election.
I haven't actually seen that. What was turnout?
I'm literally just googling it right now. Oh, sorry, it was up 4.7% around the country. So it was up a little bit, but I think it was in the region of between 50 and 60%, which is still quite low, relatively speaking.
That's reasonably good for a US election, though, I think. What do you think about the implications for other kind of populist... is right-wing the right word? Populist movements across other parts of the world.
Well, we have actually talked about this before. I mean, right-wing would certainly describe... I think it's fair to say it describes Brexit more accurately than left-wing, although I think the categories have kind of broken down in the past couple of years. But you'd look at, like, Spain with Podemos, and you'd say they're definitely more of a left-wing movement. Syriza in Greece, more left-wing. So there are left-wing populist movements that have done well, but it does appear that the right-wing... have generally been more effective at capitalising, parties considered to be right, generally.
Capitalising, right wing, sorry.
Sorry, it wasn't intended as a pun.
It was a very fun though, accidental or otherwise.
But they've generally been more effective at capitalising on it, so it's certainly conceivable that Marine Le Pen could become president of France, but that was conceivable before the Trump vote, and it was even conceivable for the Brexit vote, arguably. It's just those events have made it more believable in people's minds.
Do you think the fact that we've had Trump happen means that it's less likely to happen in somewhere like France?
For what reason?
Because people are more wary of it. There's a lot of commentators who I've seen who are like, oh, we're never going to trust the polls again. We're never going to take it for granted. Do you believe any of that, Paul?
I think as soon as they start producing polls about the presidential election in France, they probably already have them, people will still use those as a reference point, because what else are you going to go on other than gut instincts? You know, if those are the best data that you have, then, you know, there's no particular alternative to it. I think you just have to accept that polls at the moment are not producing very accurate forecasts. So, you know, if it says that Marine Le Pen's going to lose, but it's going to be by a narrow margin, it's eminently possible that she's going to win. You know, just as the fact that Trump was going to lose by a narrow margin but ended up winning, you know, is conceivable if you just consider the polls in their proper context rather than taking them as gospel.
Just to close this off, Jimmy, where are you planning on running away to as the world collapses around us?
I hear Canada's pretty good, but that does put you nearer to Trump.
Yeah, it's quite close. I was thinking New Zealand, but apparently it's very hard to get a visa there.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, they're actually even more anti-migration than Trump is.
Yeah, even if you marry a New Zealander, it's very hard to get a residency there. So somewhere, like maybe an Indonesian island somewhere, there's lots of them going spare, I hear. Although climate change is now going to become a really terrible thing, and it might not last very long.
Possibly, but you know, if we start as well, end as you started it by considering the possibility of nuclear annihilation, maybe an island in Indonesia is a better place to be than most other places.
I would agree. So, island in Indonesia it is. I'll get a map out and I'll stick a pin somewhere. Right. Anything else that you want to talk about? I'm going to make a video about this tomorrow, and I'm probably just going to say all of the same stuff.
I don't think so.
Okay, good. Excellent. If you would like to scream into the void of Twitter at us, dear listener, then please do. You can find the podcast at Right Dishonor, and you can find myself at Jazza John, and you can find Jimmy at JDE Nichols.
Very good. The sign-off's gone well.
Are you going to tell them to leave a review, Jimmy?
Yeah, I'd leave a review. It's been good.
On iTunes, leave us 5 stars.
We've both enjoyed ourselves, so I'm sure you have too. Should we round it up then and play some music?
Yeah, all right. Cool. Bye, everyone.